Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the messaging we're seeing coming out of, and finally the messaging we're seeing coming out of the mainstream media is exactly what we've been saying on this program for years. People need to make more money. We need higher wages. And the way you do that is pretty simple. You join and form unions. Wages are too low because workers don't have the bargaining power to go and demand those better wages, hours, and conditions that unions do so well, which is why corporate America for so long has done, well, so much to repress and to hold down people's ability. Why did Amazon spend $200 million to stop 5,000 workers from organizing? Oh, that's right. They might want better wages, hours, conditions. If you saw the most recent report out, the minimum wage, had it kept up with productivity, would be like $26 an hour. That's what they're afraid of. And here to share some thoughts on, well, how do we get there? I've asked Christian Weller to come talk with us. Christian's a professor of public policy at the University of Massachusetts, Boston. There's a new report out by the Center for American Progress that shows just how unions could help raise those wages and also close the massive inequality gap. Christian Weller, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Rick.
So I'm looking at this and I'm going, you know, Christian, you know, this is, for me, seems like old hat. This is something I've been saying for now 16 years we need to be doing. Finally, there's some folks going, maybe you're right.
Well, thank you very much. What we're doing is we're combining some of the insights that from other researchers and from people like you who've been saying unions are doing a bunch of good things for their members. And we're putting the numbers together and saying, when unions do these good things under collective bargaining agreements, what you see is union members ending up with more wealth than non-union members. And that benefit, that wealth premium, that extra wealth, home ownership, retirement savings in particular, is particularly large for Black and Latino workers. So to give you a sense, union members generally have about twice as much wealth as non-union members. The result of that is that comes about because union members earn more money. That's the wage premium that we know. The second part is they have more stable jobs. We often overlook that as a key benefit of what unions do. They give workers a voice at work, and that increases job stability. And that translates into more financial planning. People are willing to take more risks for their future, put more money aside because they have to plan for fewer emergencies because they're not going to be laid off the next day. And then the other part is in the same vein that union members have more benefits. They have defined benefit accounts, they have better health insurance plans, they have a number of other benefits, which then also makes it easier for people to say, like, look, I don't have to worry about how do I pay my health care. I can now put more money into my retirement account. And so all of these things together, they add up over a lifetime, over careers. And that's reflected in the sort of that union wealth premium, that union members have more wealth. Now, that union wealth premium, as I said, it's 2-to-1 on average, right, but it's 3-to-1 for Black workers, and it's 5-to-1 for Latino workers. And why is that? Well, because people of color, workers of color, are still being discriminated against, steered towards worse jobs than white workers in the private sector. Unions level the playing field for everybody, regardless of your race, ethnicity, gender, sexual orientation, and all of that. That helps to lift up all the votes. It levels the playing field. And because you're coming from a worse position, if you're part of a marginalized group, that lifting up is much higher from your starting position for people of color than it is for white people.
Right. No, but this is one of those things where, you know, I go back to the reality that all jobs at one point were horrible jobs. You think about the truck driving jobs that my grandparents, you know, took, you know, 80 years ago that were basically sweatshops on wheels, the factory jobs that were horrible, dangerous poverty wage jobs. And it's unions that brought these jobs into the middle class. And so, as you're saying, you know, people are being steered towards, you know, less desirable jobs, you know, more dangerous, lower paying ones. How we make those better jobs, because I don't believe there's a bad job. Just bad people to work for at poverty and desperation wages. But we can pull those into the 21st century and make them those living wage jobs that we need.
Right. And union is the primary vehicle to doing that. I mean, again, what we highlighted in the report and what we found in the data, and we've done this a number of times with various data sources, is that the vehicle, unions generate more than just higher wages. Like, I cannot emphasize it enough. Dignity and stability at work matter a lot.
Yep.
And that's a huge benefit. I mean, people feel it immediately because they don't have to worry about it. But we are also arguing that they feel it down the road because they have more money saved for their retirement. And to your point, why are unions the primary vehicle? There aren't that many other sort of things I could snap my finger at and say, like, here is one policy intervention we can do that it can achieve all of these things that create better jobs, better paying jobs, higher benefits, greater job stability, and that then translate into more wealth with one fell swoop. There is, in many cases, it's very difficult to achieve that even with a battery of government policies. So making it easier for people to join a union is sort of the kind of silver bullet we're looking for.
No, absolutely.
Because it does...
And it goes back
raise
to
the living standards now and into the future.
Right. But this is exactly why someone like Amazon is going to spend $200 million. Like St. Vincent's Hospital up in Worcester, Massachusetts, they're going to spend over $100 million. Why these big companies spend all this money denying their workers just the small ability to have some say. This is why they don't want to share. Because, as I said, you know, the minimum wage, had minimum wage just kept up with productivity, it'd be like $26 an hour. If you had a strong work union in the workplace, they'd be demanding that $26 an hour because we're told, Christian, we live in a meritocracy. The harder you work, the more you make. It's a meritocracy.
It can't be. All right. So like, you and I know that, like, it's not just about the wages, right? Amazon is afraid that if there is a union, they no longer can have their workers pee in bottles, right? I mean, it's about the control, the exploitation, the controlling these massive warehouses, the isolation and undignified work that many workers work in these warehouses, and the exploitation that comes with it, and then being fired or let go at any moment's notice if you didn't meet certain arbitrary goals. And that's, I think, what we often forget,
yep,
that unions are not more... Like, because an Amazon will say, like, well, you know what, we're fend this off by raising your wages for $15. And people will still want a union because that's not enough. Because we want to have control over our life. We want to be pushing back against this arbitrariness in the workplace that has sort of proliferated in the modern workplace. It's not just the truck drivers of the old days. It is the warehouse workers of the modern days that feel the brunt of this, like, ever more profit so that Jeff Bezos can fly to outer space.
Yeah, no, but it's not just warehouse workers or truck drivers. It's all workers. Every person
right.
who goes and works for somebody should have the dignity and respect of a voice on the job. And I say this all the time, because you're right. I'm the living embodiment of what you're talking about. I entered the workforce, had some job security, knowing that the only way I can be fired from the job that I have is if I do something wrong and that I have due process rights. This concept of at-will employment, I've never understood why you'd allow yourself to be put in that, because with a union contract, you have the ability to defend yourself. That gives me and other people, as you've pointed out, the ability to make long-term decisions, knowing that I'm going to have job security because I'm not going to make huge mistakes. I'm not going to really screw something up badly that's going to get me fired. And this is where I think that's part of the messaging as well, especially in this moment of pandemic where people should be paying attention to this.
Yeah, and it's on a practical level, right? So what has happened with unions declining, employers have been pushing the envelope on, like, how else can we screw over workers? And one of the things is that I find particularly pernicious in healthcare, in retail and other sectors is in the so-called frontline industries of the pandemic, right, is scheduling at on demand, where people basically have to sit at home waiting for their employers to call them to work for certain hours, but they're not being paid for the time that they're setting aside during the day. So and that kind of creates enormous financial instability and risks for individuals. And those kinds of trends unions can definitely push back on and do push back on. I cannot say it often enough. the benefits of joining unions goes well beyond just higher wages.
Right. But here's the thing, and this is where I come back to this in this moment, because the wealth class of this country has done such a good job of dividing and I would argue even conquering, you know, the old Jay Gould quote, "I can pay half the working class to murder the other half." They've done such a good job of convincing workers that they don't need unions, that they're somehow smarter or better able to negotiate or whatever, and that unions are a thing of the past. How do you see the messaging coming out of this to go, wait a second, look around at what's going on, poverty wages, desperate working conditions, long hours, even in union workshops. How do you get that messaging to move forward to pick up on what you're talking about?
Well, I think there's two things. One, I think generally people are relatively positive towards unions, and the trend has grown over time. This is just another argument. We're making the argument here that the combination of all the benefits you get today from a union contract translates into greater financial security in the future. But in the end, it is a policy issue. We have to get Washington to pay greater attention to pushing back on illegal activities, on employer power, and level the playing field so that workers who want to form a union, want to join a union, can actually do that. There is a reason why Amazon spends hundreds of millions of dollars, because they know on fighting back a union, because they know people are fed up. They want a union. They want that voice. And right now, they're paying the money for management consultants, anti-union law firms, and for anti-union lawmakers. I think in the end, this is a political decision that we have to take to Washington.
No, I'm right there with you. This is where, again, I go back to my grandparents' generation, since we talked about them a little bit earlier. You know, they came back after fighting World War II, and they went to the shop floor and they fought for an incredible standard of living, and through their fighting built the largest, most prosperous working class in the history of civilization. And it was because they had good policy that it enabled them to get what they wanted, which was demanding the ability to join and form unions. Those laws haven't changed since that era. So we're in this moment where we need something at the minimum of the PRO Act. And I would argue even something even stronger than that. But it doesn't look politically possible in this moment, at least not to me.
I honestly don't know the politics exactly of it. Right now, there is so much on the plate of lawmakers, and we're clearly divided in on the government, in Congress, to get things done. I think there's generally a lot of appetite among progressives to do more, but it will take a massive effort. I'm not super hopeful. Yeah. But on the other hand, we got to remember one thing unions are really good at is organizing. And so organize as much as you can, build coalitions, and fight for lawmakers that will ultimately enact legislation, regulation that will benefit workers. And I think you made the point earlier, we're at this particular point in time with the pandemic. People were exploited even before the pandemic. Remember, we had all these teacher strikes in states where we wouldn't expect.
Correct. Right?
Where unions weren't particularly strong. And I think that undercurrent of people are sick of being exploited is still there. And right now, people are voting with their feet. They're leaving employers. Eventually, or they're coming back. And at that point, they're still angry about being taken advantage of and being pushed around. And I can see sort of more and more movements to organizing the Amazons and the Starbucks of the world.
Well, we have to. And look, and all the other the occupations, because, you know, I do a little bit of talking to workers around the country, and they're all telling the same thing. They're overworked. They're underpaid. They're starting to get a couple of dollars more. There's some incentives being thrown out to get people to come to work, and wages are ticking up a bit. But I fear down the road, those employers, they claw those back just like they did in the 90s. And we end up, you know, higher prices and lower wages and a working class that's much worse off.
And people know that. And the other part is also one thing, like we're talking wealth here. Prior to the crisis, the typical American family had very, very little wealth to begin with. That's why the crisis was so severe. And that's why the government, even the Trump administration, had to step in with trillions of dollars to help out families. People don't want to go back to that kind of financial insecurity. And people are not dumb. They know that those two extra dollars per hour they're getting right now will disappear as soon as things sort of turn back to normal, that their employers are not doing this because they're kind-hearted. They're knowing this because they want to get them into the door now, but they're going to take it back and kick them to the curb as soon as they can.
And that to me right there is the number one reason that in this moment you go, now's the time to form a union, because we get this stuff in writing. We get it on paper, right, and we make sure that they can't claw it back, because that's one of the things unions do really well. They fight for things and then they fight to keep them.
Right, right, right. Like, you want to get this on paper and you want to make sure you not only have the extra wages, but you're also going to keep your job, and that there is a way to talk to your managers about reasonable schedule and due process and employment stability and all the other things that unions generate.
Yeah, since I've got you, I got another minute. I want to, you know, we keep hearing about this inflation that's going on, and things, prices are going up. Are you concerned long term that this is going to be a problem?
No, I'm not concerned. I do hear people's concerns, but let me just be very clear. Inflation is very isolated in a few products. Used cars, vacation homes, that's sort of where prices have gone up. But inflation means prices are going up. What people are really concerned with when we see focus groups and polling numbers is actually stuff where prices haven't risen, but they just cost too much. And that is healthcare, childcare, prescription drugs. Interestingly, healthcare and prescription drugs prices have gone down, but like in focus groups and polling numbers, people are really worried about it. Not because prices have gone up, because the stuff just costs so much. And again, unions can offset that by higher wages. The administration is steering back through a number of other things by alleviating some of the costs through the child tax credits, by proposing to invest more money in childcare and other care jobs, and so on and so forth, lifting up people's wages, incomes, and reducing their costs for things that actually do cost a lot of money. So there are two separate things. One is inflation, which I'm not worried about, and then the other one is the cost of necessities like childcare and healthcare that I am worried about, and that I'm happy to see that the administration is proposing, already doing a lot and proposing to do more.
I'm glad to hear that, because, you know, a lot of people freaking out. But if you want to check out the piece, Unions Help Increase Wealth for All and Close the Racial Wealth Gaps, we'll get links at the Center for American Progress's website, how you can get that, americanprogress.org. Christian, I appreciate you taking some time for us, sharing your expertise. As always, good stuff.
Good being with you. Have a good afternoon.
You as well. Thanks so much, our good friend Christian Weller. I'd love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.